Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Now that's a rock anthem. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So from one of the greatest rock bands in history comes a reminder to never give up hope. Journey songwriter and keyboardist Jonathan Cain takes us on an odyssey from center stage with Journey when all of America was listening to songs like Don't Stop Believin', Faithfully, and Open Arms. Through a wonderful retrospective of music that takes us right to the present, Jonathan reminds us of the melodies and lyrics that serve as milestones for our biggest dreams, and they call us to never stop believing. And joining us tonight to share that journey with Journey is Chicago's very own and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Jonathan Cain. Jonathan, welcome in, my friend.
Hey, thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Good to be with you.
I have to tell you, I was born in 1967 in Schiller Park. You graduated in 1968 from East Lydon in Franklin Park. You played piano at St. Maria Goretti. I played at St. Beatrice. We were just a stone's throw away from each other.
Is that so funny? Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I played organ. It was, they had a, I think it was a Wurlitz or organ they had there at St. Maria. But fond memories of that neighborhood.
I bet. Well, I'll tell you what. First, a belated congratulations on your induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Thank you. Yeah, it was worth the wait. You know, long awaited, but I knew it was coming. The Cubs had to win for us to get in.
I know. That was part of your speech, which I just absolutely loved.
But that's it. I mean, come on, let's break it.
Yeah?
Break the curse of the goat.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's exactly right. Well, and I also have to say congrats on this truly wonderful book. It's very relatable. You know, you're so much about perseverance, the ups and downs of life. You know, you talk about the dedications, the rejections. I think everybody can relate to this book in one way or another, regardless of what you did for a living.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to show that it takes hard work to make it, you know, and that I hope it inspires and encourages, you know, the creative people and the dreamers, you know, they've been told they can't do it and they're not good enough. And, you know, the takeaway is, you're not always who they say you are.
Sure, that's true.
You're uniquely unique, and pretty much anything's possible. If you can dream it, it'll happen. It can happen. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm proof. Yeah, I was thinking about Roger Daltrey in the steel mill, hearing Johnny Cash sing Burning Fire. You know, loves the burning fire. Bring a fire, right?
Right.
And, you know, it's just crazy that inspired him to go forth and, you know, and then who he is today, you know. So, you know, we all start somewhere. The other part is that life happens no matter how successful, how, you know, much money you think you've made and you're set, you know, and you make your first million, then you go, how do I keep it? You know?
That's right. No,
so there's a lot of life lessons in the memoir.
Well, and you talk about the accordion, and you know that's kind of how you got started. And the piano as well. Who taught you all that? Like, did you go take lessons? How did that all come
about? My father. It was my father. You know, after the school fire, you know, he wanted to shift me and give me something new to think about, something new to strive for. You know, and it was like, you're going to be great on this. I know him. So he took me to a music school, and they only had guitars, and the piano was out of the question, too much money to rent one. So the little accordion case, trainer accordion fit me, and I was like, I'll take this, Dad, you know, and off I went. And I learned all these Italian songs and ended up doing concerts in the deli downstairs for the Italians, you know.
That's fantastic.
And that's when I was like, I want to be a musician, Dad, you know, and he said, well, I'll help you with that, son. I think you're destined to be a musician. And, you know, when I came home from the fire, you know, in OLA, 1958, and survived that horrible fire.
Yeah, we're talking about Our Lady of the Angels, and it's the 60th anniversary this year. Yeah, yeah.
It's 60, yeah. I'll probably be there. I'll probably be there at the services. I was there for the 50th, and I plan on going every 10 years, you know.
Did you remember, did you know Father Joseph Agnibeni? Do you remember him from back
then? Sure, I do. Sure do. Who doesn't remember him?
Yeah.
Unforgettable.
What a great guy.
Yeah, he was like an actor, you know, like just the coolest daddy-o, you know, play football with us and just, you know, and what a deal he had, at the morgue, you know, that night with all those parents standing out waiting.
Yeah.
For identification. Oh,
yeah.
Heartbreaking. But, hey, you know, my father said, let's move on.
Let's redirect. You know? Yeah, let's get your mind off this.
And there's music for you, you know. And you know, the Bible says, out of pain, something new is born. And I believe that something new definitely was planted in me. And God truly made beauty out of ashes, you know.
Well, you know,
and there's nothing more beautiful than playing music, you know.
Well, and you experience, you know, obviously you're very spiritual, and we'll get into that. But you talk about that fire. There was no grief counseling or anything. You really needed to find something, and the piano.
And you know, I went to went to Washington to lobby for music in schools, because, and I used, you know, that story as the reason why we need to keep music, you know, in schools. Because it is, you know, redemption for your brain and your heart, and also showed these senators that the kids in band are all A students.
Yeah.
No accident. Don't take music out of school. That's not a good thing.
No, absolutely
not. Keep that money there, you know. That's well spent money. Yeah.
You know, you talk about your father so much throughout this book, and just the advice he gave you, and the tips, and the encouragement that he gave you. And, you know, I don't want to jump ahead, but Don't Stop Believing is something when you were trying to make it. You know, those were some inspiring words that you wrote down, and you really never forgot.
No, I use it sort of as a little prayer every night. You know, I get frustrated or I get depressed. I look at that. My dad said, you know. And I had it in this lyric book that I took with me everywhere, spiral notebook. And so when I landed the journey, it was probably 5 years old at that point. You know, I had written that many songs in my lifetime. And so it was a big old fat spiral notebook like you get to go to college.
Sure.
Wrote it in the back, and Steve Perry looked at me at rehearsal for the Escape album and said, "Do you have any more ideas?" And I said, "Let me go home and look in my lyric book, you know." And sure enough, there it was. Stare me in the face. I'm like, that is a journey song. What am I doing? You know, and I had just been working with Steve, so his voice was fresh in my head. I could hear it. And I said, I'm going to give him something he can soar, you know, somewhere in the night. You know?
Yeah, right.
And there it was, you know. I brought it in, and all of us contributed on that song. Every one of us, you know, helped write that song.
Well, and here's the thing with that, too. You know, you've always noted that throughout your book that you felt, you know, God kind of put you in the right place at the right time throughout your entire life. And you went to the Chicago Conservatory of Music at Roosevelt, and after graduating on to the Babies. And then, you know, it was one of those moments where, you talked about going to the premiere of American Graffiti and meeting a very unknown Ron Howard and Harrison Ford and George Lucas and Wolfman Jack.
Harrison Ford for dinner.
Wow.
Yeah, we struck up a conversation with all my cars, muscle cars and cruising and, you know, and all this stuff. And, yeah, his young Harrison Ford, I don't know this guy from Adam. I don't know anybody in the room. But the thing was, like, I was always next to great. I always saw it, you know, like it was early, you know, I got to meet all these really great people, you know, like Isaac Hayes and Stevie Wonder and even in Chicago, I ran into the guys that did American Breed, you know, Demi Shapney, you know,
yeah.
Bill Trout and Jimmy Golden, they had Wood Nickel Records, and they were doing pretty well in Chicago with a little independent label. You know, just very successful. And I'm like, well, then, you know, going to L.A. and then having Wolfman Jack management be my management.
Right,
like,
right.
Unheard of. And then I'm in the studio, the same studio, and Chaka Khan records Tell Me Something Good, you know. And Stevie comes in with his entourage and his clavinet, and I'm there.
I know, but again,
I'm watching greatness, you know.
Yeah.
I got to meet Wayne Newton when I was a kid. You know, it's like Wayne Newton was the guy, you know, back in the day, you know, everybody, Duncan Shane. and there's my manager, and Lou Rawls, and, you know, so it was always this sort of, this is what greatness looks like, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, stick around. There's more with Jonathan Cain of Journey when we come back on 720 WGN.
Ooh, the wheel in the sky keeps on turning.
Day Player, back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Jonathan Cain of legendary rock band Journey and his new book, Don't Stop Believin'. You've got a great message for dads in this book.
Speaking to their lives, I mean, yeah. I've talked to dads, you know, David, that said, hey, you know, I can't, they don't even listen to me. That's a tragedy. And I'm going to write a children's book called My Dad Matters. And I think I'm going to write a little kid's
cool.
song. And, we start him young, we're going to start him young, and we're going to instill that dad is the king. He should be treated like the king in the family, and mom's got to get on board, everybody's got to get on board. That's the way, you know, my mom was the queen, my dad was the king, and, you know, he had authority over us, and that's the way it was. And it's still that way in a lot of families, you know. That your father should be respected and admired, you know, and he shouldn't be a goat or a joke, you know, and that's what I see it falling apart of that, you know, in our society today, that fathers have taken a step back. We need to step forward. You know?
Yeah, no, I love that, and really? I love that you use
and
your father.
You have a chance. Yeah, you have a chance. I mean, with my kids. I stepped up and said, hey, you know, this is it. And I encouraged my daughter to sing and write. Took her to Nashville. You know, she almost had a country career. Now she's singing pop music. And, you know, she's my little, you know, pop diva now. And my other one is like a fashion, you know, guru in New York. She's going to have fashion. And my son is a drummer, and, you know, studying in L.A. So it all worked out pretty well.
It is very important. I mean, I've got three young kids, too. I'm 17, 12, and 5, so I've got a nice span there. But, you know, it's all about kind of following your dreams. You know, I got a 17-year-old thinking about college, and, you know, it's all about what...
Yeah, and having a plan and get a... Like, my father used to have these pep rallies on Saturday nights. You get a little beer in them, you know, and come here, son. Your mother and I need to talk to you, you know?
Yeah.
With his Budweiser, you know, and then he'd say, hey... What are we doing with this career? <laughs> You know, and we're going to map it out. So where are we going to go from here? And then he'd always, you know, just plan out what he thought the next move was. Well, you should do this, and this manager is good. And, you know, he was very hands-on with me, you know, and I would listen to him, and you're right, Dad, that's good. You know, so showing me the options going forward, you know, certainly I wasn't going anywhere, but in his mind, it was important enough to help me and guide me, you know, through the corridors that I had the options.
And you've had, and you personally too, I mean, you talk about the ups and downs, but you really did have some great success and continue to, you know, Journey itself. What a fast moving 6-7 years in that very beginning of your life. How did you
kind of like that band, the Beatles, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like that. Yeah.
I really was amazed at the parallels. The Beatles were around 6 years, and really Neil and Steve and I had these 6 years of glory together, you know, where it's just like explosion and millions of albums flying off the shelves. And what's ironic, Dave, is that when Perry and I met, when we went up there in 81, the Beatles were having a resurgence, you know, and they were, you know, they made this video, they had this video out, and they were selling this, all this catalog again. And
yep.
We were like, man, 30 years later, they're still hot, you know. Wouldn't that be cool if Journey could have that happen, you know? And I looked at them, I'm like, anything's possible, sure.
Right.
And you know, ironically, you know, we dreamed it and we did it. So,
yeah,
you know, that's really the, if you can dream it, then it's possible, you know? You can do it if you're dreaming it. And for him, it was like, let's leave something, you know, behind, you know? And that's, when I finished the book, I wrote a song about writing the book. Of course I did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Songs You Leave Behind. And it's the last page
yep.
in the book that I give to the reader. And I think it's, you know, my takeaway from the whole process of getting that down and cathartic feeling that went on with this book, because there was a lot of it, a lot of closure, a lot of understanding. I understood a lot, you know, about myself. Writing this book was the greatest therapy session I think I've ever had in my life.
I bet.
You know, really.
But I think,
you know,
but I think was,
oh, there it is.
But I think so was meeting Paula too. I mean, I think that kind of
yeah.
changed things for you too, because
oh, yeah.
you know, you grew up with, you know, the church in your life and stuff, and then she kind of brought that back because you hadn't, you
yeah,
really,
what I was missing.
Yeah, you were hungry for it. You were hungry for it.
Well, that's the Lord, and you know, so there's a CD that is going to be coming out in June called "The Songs You Leave Behind" from the book Don't Stop Believing on iTunes. And in the audio book that I have out there, there's over 20 different snaps of these songs, you know,
mm-hmm.
That are autobiographical, sort of Springsteen-esque, if you will, takes on my life. You know, I adored Bruce Springsteen growing up. As a writer, he was the one that hit me because, you know, he could say my neighborhood's worth singing about. I was like, hey, my so is mine, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
And I followed his lead, you know, and I wrote some pretty cool songs about my life. So that's really fun, the audio book, and it's on Amazon, Audible. And then you can also, you know, get it as a download. But people have been really receiving the audio book pretty well because they let me read it, you know.
That's awesome.
And there were places, man, where I was like, I don't know if I can hold my mug here. I'm going to break down. And
wow.
They left, you know, the emotional bits and the sobbing. And I almost wept in the middle of a lot of it, you know. It's hard for me to read.
Well, yeah.
You didn't write it, but when you say it, it comes out of your mouth.
Right.
Like, oh, you get swept away.
Yeah, I was going to say some pretty good therapy. And it's called Don't Stop yeah. Believing. And, you know, I always think of that song, too, now. It's so associated with the closing scene of The Sopranos. Are you surprised at the continuing popularity of the song itself and really what it means to people?
No. I'm not surprised. I'm honored. But the song transcended just being a Journey song, and it became, you know, a generation song.
Yeah, it did.
And when you write a generation song, you know, I knew that after the first time, you know, when it made the Rock of Ages
yeah.
and they chose it as
yeah.
Broadway musical finale.
Yeah,
I went, that's a generation song.
Absolutely.
You know? And you know, so I knew that. But how far can that generation song go? Well, then you know, the Sopranos, and then it was really Rock of Ages was the first, you know, place where it landed. Where, wow, and it was just pretty cool, you know. But it wasn't as big as Sopranos, but for David Chase to pick it,
right?
Maybe he saw the musical. I don't know. I don't know what put that in his mind. But he sent us an email asking us if we would, you know, sign off on, you know, the sync license. And I was like, this is the year before the episode ever aired.
Yeah.
And they asked if I wanted to see the script, and I said, no, I don't care. I trust him. He's a genius. You know?
Yeah.
The most wildly successful show at BCL. You know, it'll go down as one of the best and the longest running show, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, this guy knew what he was doing. I wonder what he's doing now. I was thinking about, what is David Chase doing? But it was so great, you know, the end of, and we needed something. Our singer had gone down, you know, he lost his voice, and we were in transition. We didn't have a lead singer. We needed a little interest in the band. It was the perfect recipe to keep us.
It really was. It really was.
Press. And I did 2 weeks of, I mean, 2 hours a day of press asking me about Don't Stop Believing. And what I loved about it as a writer of the song, one of the writers of the song, lyricist guy that I am, you know, you can't dismiss that as a pop song anymore.
No.
It has layers, you know.
Yeah.
And when you watch the scene, you hear the layers as Perry, you know, recites each lyric that we wrote. And I was like, finally. You know, my hope was that this song really gets understood. And it made it it put all the drama back in the song that we had tried to breathe into it in the first place. Because a lot of the critics, when it came out, just dismissed it, you know. Is so what, you know. Who are the streetlight people wrote the Rolling Stones?
Right, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
They might be everybody, you know, that ever had a dream.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way they would just flip us off every album we ever made. It was really great to get validated as one of the writers of that song.
No, and you've had a great, I mean, amazing, amazing resurgence, you know, as you said, around the Sopranos ending, which is, I think, in the late 2007, somewhere around there. And, you know, you guys found Arnell, who has such an amazing voice as well.
Oh, he was such, Neil, to find him on YouTube and, you know, and give him a vote of confidence. And, you know, I was on the kind of the fence, but I had to meet him and talk to him. And then I got to know him and it was like, I see this now. I understand it, you know. But we took a chance, you know. We gambled on this kid from the Philippines and it paid off. And, you know, he delivers, you know. And he's so unique and different than, you know, we knew there's only one Steve Perry. You know, there's a lot of people that try to be him. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't need one of those guys, you know.
No.
We need, you know. But it's funny. I remember Neil knocking on the door going, I want my band back. I've had enough time off.
Yeah.
You know, and I miss, you know, that guitar journey is my voice, by the way. You know, and I was like, oh, I love hearing that. You know?
Yeah.
And I said to him, well, you started this band, you know, and you're a founding member. Let's move forward. Let's see what we can do, you know. And it was really a very cool day for me because I was in my studio working on some stuff. And he just, without, you know, just came over and just said, what do you think, John? I'm like, well, we got to start somewhere, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we did. And, you know, we asked Steve first, of course. We asked Steve. Come on, you ready to come back? And he was going through all of his health issues.
Yeah,
I don't blame him for saying no because he didn't know if he was going to have a good day or a bad day, you know?
Well, and it was so great. It was so great at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, because, again, to see you guys in there, that was the most important thing. You thank the Cubs, which I love, for winning the World Series. But but Steve, you know, he didn't perform but accepted the award with all of you. You introduced him, and I'm sure it was cool having him stand by you, really, I mean, after all those years, too.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, he showed a lot of grace and a lot of class.
He did.
And, you know, he had spent some time with Arnell backstage, and they got to hang out, you know, so cool. And Neil, of course, and then I went in with Ross, you know, so he kind of was holding court in his little room downstairs, you know, from the Barclays. Holy court, having each one of us come in and spending time. And, you know, he remembered funny things that we used to do and say and, you know, just seemed very happy and comfortable. And Arnell and I remarked to each other that it sounded like his voice has been singing. He sounded like he'd been singing because his voice was way high up in his register, you know, when he was talking. I said, is it just me or does it sound like Steve's been singing? Oh, he's been singing. Oh, definitely. I said, ah.
Good for him.
Okay, well, yeah, I hope he continues to sing.
That's awesome. Well, and you're going to be in our area again, back in Chicago, Chicagoland, I should say, because July 4th, you're going to be back at
Wrigley Field.
July 4th is Summerfest. You're doing Summerfest, though, first, up in Milwaukee.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Just a stone's throw. And then, yeah, Wrigley, you get to, I mean, think about that. You know, being a guy that grew up in Chicago, watched the Cubs, you're going to be on a...
Your bum at 5 years old. Come on. I was five, but my aunt Louise used to take me to Wrigley. And I was for the $2 seats, right?
Wow. Have you driven by there? Have you seen, when you were in town a couple weeks ago or last week, did you get an opportunity to drive by Wrigley, or have you been around there in a while? Because you'll be beautifully surprised.
They changed some stuff. I saw, you know, it was very briefly, but it looked different.
Yeah.
Wrigley definitely. Yeah. You know, the owners have done a terrific job with that team. I got to meet a couple of them, one of the brothers, and amazing. Yeah, a lot. That's all they needed is the right direction, you know, and having Joe there, my God. I got to meet him in Denver. We were playing a gig, and he had a game, you know, with the Rockies. And, you know, it was just so cool because his wife's a fan of my wife, Paula, you know, and watches some of her stuff online. And it was really a neat quick visit, you know, with Joe Madden.
That's cool.
And he lives in Tampa. He's like, he's such a hippie. I love him.
Really, we all love this guy. Oh, yeah, we do,
he's
too.
He's so throwback, you know?
Yeah.
He really is. He's like...
He's so even, too. He's got so much... He's so even when
he reminds me of LaRusso a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Tony's very similar.
Yeah.
You know? Just throwback kind of, you know, Mr. Mello, and yes, everything's spinning in his head.
That's true.
He understands that. I just spoke to Tony. He's doing well. He's with the Boston Red Sox organization now, and he's doing great things with his Animal Relief Foundation. The ARF, he put this amazing relief, pet relief thing in the Bay Area.
That's cool.
Built a shelter. Now he's placing his pets with vets, you know, veterans.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, I love hearing that.
He never slows down. He's
no.
I love his leadership. He's just—I call him Coach. You know.
Well, you're no slacker either. You never slowed down as well. We're going to look forward to seeing you.
Rest never sleeps. You know, we're just constantly, you know, going at it. I've got a short amount of time left to where I can make, you know, leave a mark, and I guess that's why I wrote that song, "The Song to Leave Behind." You'll be remembered. You know. But I'm not ready to leave the dance yet, so
I got you.
I'm going to try to get it. We're going to try to squeeze another Journey album out of this lineup here, and
I hope so.
You know, make a mark here somewhere.
I love that. Well, the new book, once again, folks, very inspirational, called "Don't Stop Believing." You can pick up a copy or two at your local bookseller. And again, Journey's going to be at Wrigley Field Saturday, July 14th. And if you can't hit that, up north, July 4th, at Milwaukee's Summerfest. Jonathan, really, what a pleasure hanging out with you tonight.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave, and you know, for all the fans out there, thank you so much for sticking with us all these years. We do it for you. We do it because of you, because of the music, because you've given us, you know, so many memories and you know, make it a reason for us to go out and do it again. So
thank you.
We look forward to that relationship.
Same here. Thanks again, pal.
All right. Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
All right. It's 720 WGN.